there, and welcome to another episode of Out of the Fishbowl, a space where we attempt to look at the way things are in the world and how they might be. I'm your host, Brett Fish Anderson, and in this episode, we are going to be exploring the idea of critical thinking. Albert Einstein once said, "Education is not the learning of facts, but the training of the mind to think." And let's hear that one more time. Education is not the learning of facts, but the training of the mind to think. We're going to be exploring that a little more deeply in an episode that I like to call
Episode 4, Thinking is Critical.
Now, as children, one of the first things I think we learn to communicate is this question of why. When kids start speaking, why do I have to go to bed? Why do I have to eat my vegetables? Why must I turn the TV off? And then often there's a lot of curiosity about how things work as well, which often come in the form of the question why. And I know in my generation, which was a long time ago, this would often be the first thing that we would beat out of them, and sometimes sadly literally. And it would often come up against this response from a parent or parental figure, "because I said so." There was the space of drawing the line, of establishing authority, that would never go into giving answers or giving understanding or encourage wrestling or pursuit of knowledge. It was just, "I'm the adult, I say it is so. That's why you need to do things. Don't question it, don't question me." And it was a very authoritarian time. And I'm not sure, I know we live in a different world in many ways, but I imagine there are still kind of many households where children still come up against that when they ask a why and it is shut down or ignored or silenced. And then we also have many friends who are raising their children with encouragement to ask the why, encouraging their children to wrestle, to hold them accountable, to understand why the world works the way it is. And so I imagine this kind of happens on both sides. Now, the place that I think explains this phenomenon to me really well is the movie The Matrix. And I'm realizing that as I'm talking about this, The Matrix is now actually quite an old movie. And so there might be a lot of people who are listening who haven't watched The Matrix. And so I don't want to just assume. But basically, it's this sci-fi futuristic thriller set in a time where humans have been taken over by artificial intelligence, robots kind of control the world. And the basic premise of the movie is that we are fed an idea of what the world is about. And so our lived experience isn't real, but it's an image or a projection that is being fed to us at the same time as humans are kind of plugged into these machines and being used as batteries to fuel the robots. And our hero, Neo, has this moment early on in the movie where he is presented with two pills, a red pill and a blue pill. And the presentation or the invitation that's given to him is to have this world, this matrix that has kind of been pulled over your eyes, to have that pulled back and to get a chance to see what the world really looks like and what's really going on. And the other choice is to take a pill that will make him forget that conversation, forget that there actually is another world, and to just continue to believe the lie or the fantasy that he's been fed. And we see this play out so many ways in the world today with things like racism or sexism, where there's an idea of how the world is, that men are portrayed as better or more powerful or more capable, or where white people have been portrayed as more intelligent or more capable. And that's kind of the world that many of us grew up in. And so what critical thinking does is it gives us this opportunity of inviting us into a space where if we ask the right questions and if we do the right work, we can start to see that the story we've been sold about the world is in fact not the way it is, or not the way it should be. And so it's kind of this idea that one of the characters in the movie actually decides to kind of get plugged back into the matrix because the lie is actually a lot more comfortable or feels a lot more lavish than the truth. So for example, in The Matrix, when he eats, he has this idea that he's eating a steak, even though it's a lie, it's not real. The reality is that the food they have is this awful porridge stuff. And so he chooses to to plug himself back in for the lie of the stake, which looks a lot better than the reality of the porridge. And so that's often where this choice is. If we choose not to think critically, if we choose not to question the world, it often will be a lot more comfortable for us. There are benefits. As a man, if I do not question the space of men in the world, there are certain benefits and privileges and things I get out of that. As a white person, if I don't question the fact that whiteness has been raised as a standard or as better than or whatever, if I don't question that, there's luxury, there's comfort, there are benefits associated with that. And so this idea of critical thinking is not always enviable. It's not always something that is tantalizing or tempting, because it might lead us down a path that is more work. And that's the path of truth, the path of equity or justice. And to chase after those things and to seek a world that works better for all people rather than one that works really well for me and less well for other people, that is going to require effort. It might require pain. It might require fighting and confusion and difficulty and cost. And so I think that's why a lot of people end up choosing against critical thinking. I think a lot of people just grow up in a system where it was never taught. And so they don't think that way. If we think of schools, in school, when I grew up and went through the process, we were taught to believe the story. We weren't taught to question it. And so we were taught to learn a set of facts or things that were presented to us as facts, including something like history, where history would have been written with a certain bias or with a certain prejudice towards a particular nation or particular people. But we were taught that is the way things are. That story is true. All you have to do in school is learn that story and regurgitate it onto a paper. And so the focus was on questions like what and who and when, as opposed to things like why. Why did that happen? Why was the story told this way? And how? How did things go down? How do things really work? Who is benefiting from the system the way it is? Who's benefiting from the way that our economic system works, that our political system works, that our education system works? And so school was not a place where we were taught to think critically. It was a place where we were taught to obey, to stay in line, to follow the rules, and to learn and regurgitate. And so going back to parents. And when I speak to parents, I want to open up that set. I want to make it a little bit bigger. So we've got biological parents, parents who have children. We've got adoptive parents, parents who invite children to become a part of their family. But I heard this kind of category the other day, social parenting. And I think it was in the space of Heartlines where I work. And it's this idea that there are many people who do some forms of parenting, whether it's mentoring or co-parenting, whether it's being a teacher or an uncle or a colleague or a friend or whatever, where parenting is happening, but not in the traditional sense. And so I want to address this to parents who are biological and social, just people that have any kind of influence in the lives of children and young people. And the question is, how are we doing in terms of teaching the young people who are in our spheres to question critically? I remember a story when I used to be a youth worker in a church, and one of my families had parents that said to their kids, you can't watch television. And so they stopped their kids from watching TV. There was a no TV rule. And it was kind of with this mindset of everything on TV is evil, or there's so many things that are bad that we want to protect you from. And it came from a really good space where they were trying to protect their children from what they saw as the evils of television. But the way that could have been done, another way that could have perhaps been done, is to say, instead of no TV, here's how to watch television. Here are some things that we are concerned about. Here are some things that might be problematic for you to watch at this age, or that might be challenging or go against our values and beliefs or whatever. And so you've got two things there. You've got the rules which dictate, which maybe give a punishment if you break them, which create boundaries. And then you've got the values. And I would say that values dictate behavior. So if you train up your children and teach them values, then when it comes to spaces where there should be rules or boundaries or whatever, the children will be more able to put those in place themselves. And so if you teach a value, the value will dictate the behavior. But in that space where parents were saying no TV, it could only be policed and governed in spaces where they were. And so the moment these kids went to their friend's house, or the moment they left school and left the home and were allowed to go out, they would have all the access to television they wanted. And because the parents weren't there to police it or to create or uphold the boundaries, they hadn't actually taught the children anything except a rule. The only rule they taught them was stay away from this thing. But in brackets, when we're around. Because the moment we're not around, and typically what happens is when you say no or you put boundaries on things, is that people tend to want to go the opposite way. And so those kids were hungry to understand this thing because they'd never been taught why TV was wrong. It was just no TV. And so the moment there was access to TV, they would rush to it. And so how do we parent well? How do we train our kids up with values that will dictate their behavior rather than behavior that is kept because of the rules, because of the boundaries, but that require us to be policing them? Do we take time to explain? Do we encourage our children to seek knowledge? Do we entertain the why question? And I think in education, as I kind of mentioned before, historically we have not done this really well. We've determined which subjects are more important, and that's been linked to which careers we've said are more important. And we've leaned heavily on rote learning, which is the regurgitation I was speaking about, versus this idea of understanding, of wrestling, of discovering. Now, I've been super fortunate to work with an organization for the last 4 or 5 years called Bottom Up. They are a non-profit organization that work in the Western Cape in schools in the wider Grassy Park area. And I love Ashley that heads this thing up and his team of leaders. They are just some of the most amazing people, some of the most amazing minds, and especially when it comes to this idea of critical thinking. So what they've done is they've gone into some of the local schools and they've worked with kids that are typically on the RCLs, so the leadership bodies of the school. And they've taught these young people how to ask good questions. They've taught them about critical thinking. They've got them reading books by authors like Fanon and Paulo Freire, things like The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. And these are like heavy, quite intense learning books. And these are high school pupils in areas where typically there might be various struggles that you won't have in more kind of wealthy areas or the southern suburbs, for example. And what I love about Bottom Up is that they've raised this bar and they've put up this high bar and they've challenged these young people to really not settle for the way things are, to really question the way things are and to look at what could the world look like if things were different. And so they've taught these kids to hold their schools accountable, and that hasn't always gone well. They've been asked to leave schools because of it, but they've worked with the RCLs, and in turn those RCLs have started to challenge kind of the language policies in the schools. They've started to challenge corporal punishment, which is illegal but is still practiced in many schools. They've started to challenge some of the uniform rules that work one way for boys and another way for girls. And they've really helped these younger people with skills that I think are going to equip them for life. And so whenever I talk about Bottom Up, I talk about these kids as, in my opinion, they have the best education in South Africa. I went to one of the top schools in the Western Cape, and we were never taught this kind of thinking, this kind of handling of information, of the truth, of research, of backing up our thinking with reasons and facts and statistics and understanding who makes the rules, who the rules benefit, who the systems benefit, and all of that. And so these young people that Bottom Up are working with are receiving this phenomenal education because they're being taught to ask questions. And this typically, if you focus on an education that invites question asking, it's going to be more work for teachers. It's going to be more work for schools. But it produces critical thinkers who might transform the world. Because the work that's being done with these young people, it's not going to stop when they leave school. It's not simply to help them get the certificate they need to gain entry into the next phase of life. But it's teaching them a questioning that is going to work in their own lives with regards to finances, with regards to what job to take, with regards to how to treat homeless people, with regards to how to listen to ideas from people that don't look like them. There's just so much, there's such a richer understanding of life and all aspects of life that critical thinking is going to add to the lives of these young people. And I've seen it in terms of some of the opportunities some of these young people have already had, in terms of pulling together youth forums, in terms of international opportunities of connecting with young people from other countries and having speeches, sharing speeches, sharing ideas. And if you want to get hold of Bottom Up, you can look them up at bottomup.org.za. they are well worthy of your support. And even just getting a look at who they are and what they do, it's been a phenomenal opportunity to be working alongside them. And I've learned so much of my critical questioning from them as I look at things like race and justice and poverty and money and things like that, that I'm learning in that, how to ask better questions. And I think if we follow that train of thought, if we have critical thinking in education, we can see the benefits that it brings. But what happens when there's a lack of critical thinking? And I think one thing that we see all the time when people aren't thinking critically is that it encourages the one-click sharing of fake news on social media. And so somebody shares an article on Facebook, you read the heading, you don't even bother to read the article. The heading is something inflammatory or something challenging or something shocking. And so you share it and you influence all of your followers or all of your crowd of people. And then five other people see it and they share it. Or people might read through it and it confirms their biases or their prejudices or whatever. And so they click it without asking, who wrote this article? Where does it come from? Is it true? Are there facts that back it up? Or is this just some inflammatory story that somebody's sharing because they are trying to get hits or likes or interest, or because they're trying to push a theory that they believe in but which can't be backed up? And so when you talk about things like the idea of the extent of farm murders in South Africa, this notion of white genocide, those are all ideas that are very appealing to some people, and so they get shared before they get fact-checked. People don't look at the facts of how many farmers are killed compared to how many other people are killed in the country, for example. And if you look at that even a little bit, you realize that South Africa does not have a farm murder problem. We have a murder problem. And it's in all spaces in society. And so it's really important that we start to look at things a bit more differently, a bit more critically, that we start to ask questions. Is this true? Is this narrative that I'm following on social media, that I'm liking and sharing, is it true? And starting to do that before we share things, before we become a bigger part of the problem of increasing the fake news that is on offer. And so it really will help all of us if we take on critical thinking. Because on that is this idea that self-education is crucial. And for those of us that are connected to the internet, like, this is so much different than when I was a child and I heard an idea. Like, now we can jump onto our phones, we can jump onto the internet and check things out. And it's quite easy to educate ourselves on things. There are sites that were created to pick up fake information. So you can go to Snopes.com or something. If you see a headline, punch it in. And things have already been proved to be hoaxes. And so self-education is crucial because the information is there. We can more easily find out what is true and what is not true today if we just do a little bit of work. Now, when I look at this idea of critical thinking, there's a great irony in terms of my own journey towards critical thinking. As I look back and think, how did I start doing it? Where was my critical thinking influenced? And I think most of it was caught by spending time with incredible people in a range of different spaces, like leaders. A lot of those spaces for me happen to be in the church, and so on camps or on conferences, just connecting with other leaders. Connecting with and watching people that do critical thinking well. And so a lot of it was caught. Rather, I didn't sit in a class and get taught critical thinking, but I watched people that would do it and would do it well. And I watched people that would ask better questions. And I watched people that would have more backing for the statements they were making. And there'd be something about it that just seemed really attractive. There's an authenticity. There's a power. There's a rightness in those spaces that I find really attractive. These are not just people following what they think or feel. These are people that have really done the work and they really are striving for justice and for equity in the world. And so the way they think about things influences me. But when I talk about irony being present, one of the biggest shoves in my journey happened during our time in America. And I think that's ironical because I'm not sure that America is necessarily the greatest bastion of critical thinking. But I do think that you'll find there's a lot of critical thinking done in America, and there's a lot of spaces where critical thinking is not done at all. And our boss at the time in this organization we were working at, Darren Peterson, he modeled it and he called us to it. And it was really this notion of ask better questions. And so whether it was an interview situation that we'd be sitting with him in, whether it was an article I'd be writing for him, or whether it was an event that he was organizing, there was this idea that he would ask questions that would really make us think not just about the thing, but about the things behind the thing. And it's along those lines of who benefits from this, who is missing, what voices are left out if we do it this way, who should be leading, who needs to step aside. And as for those of you that have followed me, I imagine you can hear a lot of these things are present when I'm dealing with race and with gender and things like that, of asking who needs to have their voice heard at the microphone. Who should I be reading? Who should I be listening to? That was another space where critical thinking came into our journey in the States, was this idea of reading people that don't look like us, gaining perspectives and ideas and gaining from life experiences of people that were very different to mine. And so in those spaces with Darren, we learned to look at things like wealthy versus poor and how different things related differently to those groups. About comfort versus survival, that when people are wealthy, they live for comfort. When people are poor, they are just trying to get through the day often. And so they don't have the same opportunities. They don't have the same energy or resources to be able to do the same things. And so by critically thinking into spaces, we could produce events and writing and training and systems or whatever that benefited all people, that brought more people that would have been pushed to the margins into the center. And I think another place where we see this a lot is in the area of religion. And I speak more directly to Christianity because that's something I've been part of, that typically in the church, people have often been not so much not being encouraged to ask, but actually a lot of the time being encouraged not to ask questions, not to challenge the way things are done, not to challenge the pastor, who is generally a male, generally a white male. Don't ask questions, don't challenge. And we go back to that idea that we had as a child. Because I said so, believe me, don't question it. And so that is why with religion so often we can see people living contrary to the way they say or the things they say they believe. We see people saying they believe one thing and then living a life that looks completely different to that. And you just have to look at the basic command of Christianity, love your neighbors, yourself, to be able to see so many spaces where that doesn't kind of play out in the world. And I think I want to end off with two stories. One of them is that I was in a counseling session the other day where it was my first session with a counselor to try and work through some issues in my life. And he started off by saying, ask me any questions you want, so that you can start to build a base of trust for me, so you can start to trust me, because we didn't know each other, and I hated that. It was like, hey, I came here so you could do the work for me. Don't make me do all the work. And so I started asking some questions just that came to mind. And then as I was doing it, I had this amazing question just popped into my mind, and it was like critical thinking had just been switched on. And so I looked at him and I said, tell me, why shouldn't I trust you? And the question actually impressed him. He stopped for a moment. He was like, wow, that is a good question. And he said, I'm going to be thinking about this later as well. But he gave some thought in the moment and he answered it well. And he was like, here are some of the reasons why this work with you might not work out. Here are some of my weak points where we could get distracted, where I could influence you instead of listening to you. And his answer was really profound and really helpful. And so It's just finding the moment, and often it's helpful to slow things down. So in that session, he threw a question at me that I wasn't expecting, and so I just started throwing out questions. But as he was answering, I was starting to think, and so it was just that pause moment of thinking and being, oh, here's a good question. Here's a better question. Why don't you tell me why I shouldn't trust you? And so often there are spaces and times where a question can really just unpack a situation. It can turn a thing on its head. It can help us to find out what's really going on. And I have one last example of, I think, how critical thinking can shift the lived experience. And this goes way back. I've been married for 12 years. And before I got married, I used to get invited to a lot of weddings. So I was in my 30s when I got married. And so I would get invited to a lot of weddings, and I would always or often end up at the single table, which is where they typically stick all the individual people that don't have any people. So you get stuck at the singles table and you're with eight other people you don't know, and it's usually a horrible experience. And my life was transformed because I used to hate those times. I used to find them so challenging and uncomfortable and weird, and you're stuck with people you don't know that you aren't going to spend any more time with and you don't really care. And you tend towards the question, what do you do? That would be the go-to question. What do you do? And I realized at some point that I didn't really care. I don't care what you do, but I do care who you are. And so I think I got the idea from someone else, but especially in those spaces, and I use it in other places as well, but I started asking the question, what are you passionate about? And that is an idea of critical thinking, because what do you do doesn't tell me a lot about you, because a lot of people are doing jobs they don't enjoy and doing things that they got stuck into. Some people enjoy them, but what are you passionate about? Everyone is passionate about something. And many people that I ask that question to respond with, oh, I'm not passionate about anything, because they're thrown by it. It's not a question they're asked often. But if you prod and you give it a little bit of time and they get a little bit of time to think, then you start to hear who this person is. They're passionate about cooking. They're passionate about the outdoors. They're passionate about helping other people, whatever it is. Like, what do you like? What gives you joy? What fills you with excitement? And as people can start to explain what they're passionate about, you get this very real sense of who they are. And once I've had a conversation with someone where I know who they are, I'm more interested in pursuing that relationship than if I just sat around a table and heard, I'm a banker, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a cashier, whatever it is. So I want to encourage you this week to be on the lookout for spaces, whether it's in meetings or conversations, where you can ask a better question, something that will take you both on a journey. Just to see how it goes, just to look for spaces where you can start bringing in this idea of critical thinking. How will a question change this meeting around? How will a question change this engagement around? And typically it will be something that goes a little bit deeper. Something that says, how did we get here? What is really going on? Who really benefits? What is this thing really about? And I hope that I get to hear from some of you how that goes. Come back here, jump into the comments section and let us know how it goes. And as you head out, as you continue life this week, I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's given you something to think about. And let's just remember that thinking is critical. And so wherever we are, whatever we're doing, let's be thinking critical, thinking critically about the way the world works and about the way that we work and engage with the world. Thank you.